Have you ever applied a skincare product to your body and wondered what kind of crazy chemicals are in it, and then read the ingredient list and realized you can't even pronounce half the ingredients? Your skin is the largest organ of your body, and what you put on it becomes part of you. In fact, if your skincare has chemicals you wouldn't eat, you probably ought not rub it all over your body. This is why in our house we use Tallow Skin Solutions Body Butter. It is made with all natural ingredients that are safe enough to eat and offer your skin the nutrients it can thrive on. The tallow is sourced from a family farm in Georgia, which practices sustainable regenerative agriculture. The body butter also has organic coconut oil, organic cocoa butter, and organic essential oils. The texture is silky and luxurious as it is whipped to the perfect consistency. Enjoy one of the five different scents. My personal favorite is creamsicle, which blends vanilla and orange and smells delicious. If you've never used a natural product like this, you are in for a treat. Go to tallowskinsolutions.com and enter code MINDFUL for 20% off. That's tallowskinsolutions.com and use code MINDFUL for 20% off your next order.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Mindful Movement Podcast. I'm your host, Les Raymond, and I want to thank you for joining me today for another episode. Today, my guest is Dr. Melina Roberts. She's a naturopathic doctor and an author. She works out of Calgary and was really looking forward to this conversation just to talk about wellness in general and maybe some different strategies that might not be as well known to help people move towards a greater state of well-being. I hope you enjoy the episode, and we'll link in the show notes to ways to reach out to Dr. Roberts if you want to learn more or get access to her book. I hope you enjoy the show. Hello, and welcome to the Mindful Movement Podcast. I'm your host, Les Raymond, and I want to thank you for joining us today for another episode. I'm really excited about our guest today. Her name is Dr. Melina Roberts. She's a licensed naturopathic doctor, the author of Building a Healthy Child, founder of the Advanced Naturopathic Medicine Center, Medical Center in Calgary. And she specializes in biological medicine and uses that to effectively treat digestive issues, chronic disease, and even cancer. Dr. Melina Roberts, please say hello to the Mindful Movement audience.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, me too. I'm really excited. I myself have been through a lot of health stuff issues, I guess, in my past. And I felt like I hit dead ends in, like, I don't know, the Western model.
Yeah.
And even though they're so skilled at certain things, it seems like I found that the framework that they're kind of stuck in wasn't as useful to what I was experiencing. And then over time, I learned that I wasn't alone in that. And a lot of people feel like they hit kind of a dead end and have to go to, I guess, what's considered an alternative route.
Yeah.
Where I've always thought that it's more natural route and the Western model might be more alternative, but I guess everybody looks a different way. How did you get into naturopathic medicine, Melina? And maybe you could take a moment and explain what that even is for the audience.
Yeah, well, I experienced it potentially. I'm not too, I don't know your whole backstory, but I also had some health issues as a child. As a kid, I had really bad allergies and eczema. And we tried a number of different avenues to try to help with those allergies. And when I was about 13, a family friend said to my parents, you know, you should try taking her to see a naturopathic doctor. And, you know, we had no idea what a naturopathic doctor was. We didn't know what they did and if they could even help me. And, but they, you know, we went in with an open mind, and I went in and really, after a short period of time, all of my allergies and my eczema completely cleared up. So I sort of thought it was magic because I didn't really understand what naturopathic medicine was. And then going
How old were you at the time?
I was 13 at the time. 13, okay. Yeah. So I'd suffered for 13 years with allergies, but.
Oh, wow. So you had it your whole life up to that point.
Yeah, exactly. And so I sort of thought that was normal and I would just have to learn to live with it. So, it was pretty amazing to me to be able to experience that myself.
And how long did it take once you went down that avenue of naturopathic medicine? Like, how long did it take for you to heal from that?
I can't remember exactly, but it felt like it was a really short period of time. So I would say just like a few months until that cleared up. And it was just, and it seemed like really simple stuff. It was just like, I made some changes in my diet. I had to take a few, you know, tinctures and some supplements and stuff. And then all of a sudden my skin was clear and, you know, I'd never seen that before. I'd never, you know, I had these rashes all over my body and to just see my skin heal and clear, become clear, it gave me some insight. It was like my first insight into the ability of the body to be able to heal itself. And before that, I'd really had no exposure and realized that the body had that ability.
So what makes that approach so different that people like yourself are allowed to, or are able to make such progress over such a short period of time?
So, and I think that that's really what it comes down to is that naturopathic medicine is looking at root causes. So we're not trying to just stick or just treat symptoms. And I think that, like, you know, especially when it comes to skin issues, a lot of people think, oh, well, you got to treat it, you know, by putting a cream on it, right? You're treating externally. And when it comes to skin issues, it's typically coming from internal. You need to heal from the inside out. And that's what I've really come to realize is going through naturopathic college and then practicing now for 16 years is that we need to heal the body from the inside out. And that's the essence of naturopathic medicine is looking at it from a different perspective and just trying to figure out, you know, what those underlying causes are. And for me, what I figured out is that most of the underlying causes of health issues comes down to gut health. And if we can get the digestive tract in balance, we get that microbiome. So those little critters, the ecosystem of bacteria and fungus that live within our gut, if we can get those in balance, we heal up the lining of the digestive tract, we get the organs of detoxification working at their best, then the body, we set up this environment that allows the body to be able to heal itself. So gotcha. Yeah.
You mentioned organs of detoxification. I feel like the word detox or detoxification gets thrown around in really weird ways without like the context of how the body actually gets rid of toxins. And you see all these, I don't know, like juice cleanses and things that make these claims. Is that stuff for real? Do you think people just slap like the term detox on different protocols for like marketing purposes? Or like when I read about detoxification, it seems so mechanical, you know, when you read about it, and it doesn't seem to be presented that way when you hear all these like magic solutions that are, you know, marketed towards us so regularly.
Yeah.
Maybe you could explain, like, give some context of how the body detoxes and maybe the importance of that when people are going through any kind of illness and the role it plays in healing.
Yeah, so I think it is a really big term, and I agree with you. It does get tossed around, and I think a lot of the challenges with a lot of those detoxes on the market is that they just tend to move toxic loads from one area of the body to another without effectively moving those out. But really what it comes down to is that, you know, that we're, our systems are always cleaning itself up, latching onto toxins, trying to move those toxins effectively out of the body. And we constantly have to be supporting those organs of detoxification. And it's not like just like once a year, let's just do a liver cleanse and help to clean up the body. Those systems are constantly working. We always have to be supporting them. And what we have is we have these major organs of detoxification. We have our liver, our kidneys, our lymphatic system, our lungs. These are our major organs of detoxification, and they are constantly trying to clean up anything that comes into the body that shouldn't be there, or even toxic loads that our body makes internally. So sometimes our cells will create some debris or waste, and we want, so what we want is our body to be able to clean up these toxic loads and then effectively move them out of the body. So that's what these major organs of detoxification are constantly doing. So, you know, like I have an online program that does like a systematic detox, but you have to make sure that you support these organs in a really systematic way, because if you don't do that, you can actually make the system worse. For example, you got to make sure that the body is actually moving toxic loads out through the bowels. So, for example, if someone is constipated, then that whole system gets backed up because we're not effectively able to move that out. And then our body will be reabsorbing toxins through that liver if we have that constipation picture. So we got to make sure that bowels are moving effectively. If they're not moving effectively, then we can't start trying to get that liver to start moving toxic loads out, because it's dumping into the colon. And then if the colon's not moving effectively, then those bowels aren't effectively, then that those toxic loads won't move effectively out of the colon. So these detox pathways are definitely important to be open and moving, so that we can effectively, so that every cell and every system of our body can move that toxic load out. And this is important for really every disease process. But, you know, one of the things that I see in my clinic a lot is cancer. And no matter how you break down tumor cells, no matter if you use it in a conventional way or if you do it through alternative ways, no matter what, you need to make sure that those organs of detoxification are effectively moving that cellular debris out of the body, or you can actually be increasing that toxic load in your system. And I think that this is often a missing piece, even in terms of people who are doing chemo and radiation, that they're not supporting those detox pathways and making sure that we can effectively move that toxic load out. Does that make yeah, sense?
It does. So when people go to, like, I guess cleanse the junk out of the body, the order in which you approach it matters. Otherwise, you yes. kind of just stir things up if they're yeah. not. So you want to get good at moving them out before you start, I guess, you know, squeezing more of them so they got somewhere to go.
Yeah, like as I do it, you know, you kind of have to move through the system, because the challenge, because I'll work through and do some detoxing or cleansing or drainage remedies. They kind of get, these words kind of get tossed around. But what you have to do is, often there's toxic loads around our cells. So it's in the called the microenvironment or in the terrain. And you have to work on draining that toxic load out just at that deep cellular level. And if you're not moving those toxic loads out, then it's tough for you to get the nutrients into the cells to drive those detox pathways. So sometimes people are giving you a whole bunch of supplements to help drive some detox pathways, you know, called, you know, phase one and phase two detoxification pathways, right? But if you have toxic loads all around your cells, then we can't get those nutrients into the cells. So that might be going a little bit deep, but you know, like that's how we have to look at it. We have to look at, okay, we got to clean up that area and that terrain before we start giving the body the nutrients to get those, to get into those pathways before we can drive some of those detox pathways. So.
No, I don't mind getting deep. I think a lot of people could benefit from hearing some like basic, I don't know, liver 101 or something to learn what actual detoxification is. Well, like, why do we have such, like, why are so many more people now affected negatively by toxins, whether they're endogenous from our body or from the environment? Do we just live in a more toxic environment? Is like the food and water supply, you just think exposed has more junk in it? Or, yeah. I mean, has this been since the beginning of time? Or do you think this is, you know, relatively recent, 100, 200 years or something, where we just have to have detoxification like accounted for in our lifestyle more?
Yeah, I would say that it's been in the last, you know, 100, 200 years that we have increased the toxic load in our environment. And we are asking a lot of our human bodies to detox a lot of these increase of toxic load that our bodies have to deal with. Everything from being in our environment, being in our water, being in our food supplies, to everyday life. So our systems are just assaulted really with an increase in toxic load. And it makes it so that if we want our bodies to be functioning at optimal capacity, that we have to be constantly taking care of these detox pathways.
So, is there also like a genetic component? Like, are some people just better at getting rid of toxins genetically than others, you think?
Yeah, for sure. So, one of my great colleagues, Ben Lynch, has written a book called Dirty Genes. And I think that anyone who wants to go into the genetic component of it should really read that book. But in terms of that, there's a component of us having basically dirty genes, in that we have a huge amount of toxic load that's making it more challenging for our or those detox pathways to work properly. And then there's also a component, there's a number of us who are born with genes that aren't as effective at moving toxic loads out. And I've run some of that genetic testing on myself, and you know, I'm coming from a family that I have a pretty bad family history in terms of cancer and heart disease, and what I see in my genetic profile is that I'm a poor detoxifier. So the cleaner I can keep my terrain, the cleaner I can keep my system, then I can get the systems that do function well, I can get them to work well. And the ones that aren't working as well, then I need to be able to support them with the proper nutrients. But the nutrients have to be able to get into those cells. So I got to clean up the terrain around them. So there's a genetic component, but there's also this thing called epigenetics. And epigenetics is the environment around our cells will affect how those genes are expressed. So I think that the answer is yes and yes. You know, that yes, there's a genetic component, but there's also that environmental component as well.
Gotcha. Can you, before I guess we move on, can you detail a little bit about how, like, what, when people hear phase one, phase two, phase three detoxification, what that actually refers to?
Yeah, so yeah, there's, in terms of the liver, our liver has specific detox pathways. So there are these pathways that will basically transform toxic loads into substances that the body can now easily eliminate. And so it just goes through these different pathways. And in terms of those pathways, they need certain nutrients and minerals in order to support those pathways to help them move through to completion. And, you know, some of them are like your Bs and your different minerals for like a phase one detoxification. But all of those, both phase one and phase two detoxification, need something called glutathione. And glutathione is a major antioxidant, and it's very important in terms of those detox pathways. And the challenge is that if we have a lot of toxic loads coming into phase one and the glutathione gets used up with phase one, then we may not have enough glutathione to push you through to phase two. And if things are kind of stuck in that phase one, then we'll have kind of a buildup of toxins because we need it to kind of move through these phases to get through to completion in order for your body to effectively package those toxic loads and then effectively move them out of the body. And then phase three is one that they've really just added in, but those can also be some of those like fat soluble toxins that can move out through the biliary systems through the bile and help to effectively move out by attaching on to bile or getting emulsified by bile and then being effectively moved out, usually through the stools. So they're kind of more complex biochemical processes that happen in the body, but there's your phase one, and then your body needs to push through to phase two and then effectively move that toxic load out. Hopefully, does that make sense?
Yeah. So like, what's a person supposed to do if they're, you know, they're piecing together their daily routines and they just want to maybe account for like everyday support to just give themselves a better chance to kind of manage the toxic environment and the toxic exposures that we have so that it doesn't lead down along to the, you know, to a chronic disease state? Are there like recommendations that you give to your clients for just kind of like ways of living to account for that? Or like, I don't know, drinking enough water, things like that? Or?
Yeah. So, well, I would think that, I think that sometimes, you know, we kind of get into those nitty gritty details of like phase one and phase two detoxification. But when it comes down to it, I think what we really need to do is get down to basics. You know, the first thing I usually will discuss with my patients is trying to avoid those toxic loads that we're taking in, especially through our foods. And so one of the major ways that we're taking toxic loads in is through the foods that we're eating. And there's a lot of foods that we're eating that our bodies actually can't properly metabolize and break down. And
What would be like
an yeah, example so those would be what I would call major inflammatory foods. So that would be things like gluten. So gluten, our bodies just can't effectively break it down. So it actually is causing inflammation in our gut and can contribute to like a hyperpermeability in terms of those intestines. So causing like holes into those intestines, often called hyperpermeability of that digestive tract, or sometimes we call it leaky gut, but a lot of people kind of try to stay away from that term. So there's gluten. The other one would be cow's dairy. So that's your like milk, yogurt, cheese, ice cream. Staying away from those, and the other major inflammatory food I suggest staying away from is sugar, white refined sugar. And we find that in a number of areas, from the traditional ones, which would be candy, but then we also will see it in things like salad dressing. We see it in different sauces, and we'll also see it in a lot of different processed foods. So staying away from those. And the other one that I will also add in will be industrial oils. So those will be things like canola oil, corn oil, soy oil,
those seem to be in like every processed food. When you read the ingredients of, if you're in a grocery store,
yeah,
and you're not looking at the produce section or the meat section, everything else seems to have, one or more of those in it.
I know it's I'm actually putting together a blog on that too, is just some hidden areas that you tend to find those industrial oils, because yeah, I find that too, that even when you're thinking you're eating healthy, they kind of sneak in those industrial oils into like salad dressings and sauces and things that say that they're gluten-free, will still have those industrial oils. But those industrial oils have been shown to cause a lot of inflammation in our digestive tract. And one of the major problems with those industrial oils is that they are actually becoming part of our, because our body doesn't actually differentiate between healthy oils and unhealthy oils. And those unhealthy oils actually will become part of our cell membranes. And when they're part of those cell membranes, overall, they're decreasing the functionality of all of the cells in our body as we continue to take in those industrial oils. And so to me, that's one of the major problems with those industrial oils, is how they become really part of our systems, and that we need to be removing those, because as our cells turn over, our cells will actually, it'll decrease the integrity of our cell membranes. And that leads to a decrease in the integrity of our organs and our tissues and overall our human body, the functionality of the human body, if we have too many industrial oils coming into our system.
So do you think there's like a direct link from these, when people come in and they don't feel well, and maybe they've already been diagnosed with cancer, or they have a digestive issue or some other chronic illness? Do you think those are generally rooted in this relationship of basically what's coming into the body, what we're eating? Do you think that's like the biggest lever we have to pull to affect these potential disease processes down the road?
Yeah, I think that's the biggest one that we can control, is by removing those major inflammatory foods and replacing them with real foods. So having ideally organic foods that aren't filled with toxins, aren't causing inflammation in our gut. Yeah, I think that's one of your major levers in terms of of making changes and improving the health of the body is removing those major inflammatory foods, because that's causing so much damage in our system. And that's, to me, like, the gut health is what is leading to a lot of other health issues that we're seeing in our society today. So yeah, the bigger changes we can make in terms of the diet, that will make the biggest impact in terms of our overall health.
So you eliminate the, I guess, the foods that are, that kind of insult the intestines, because I guess that's the front line where our body will have a potential negative reaction, I guess, that will lead to stuff down the road. But when, I mean, when you try to learn what to eat, so it seems like there's a lot of people out there that kind of agree that, yeah, sugar's bad,
yeah,
inflammatory oils are bad, you know, dairy, kind of a lot of different opinions on that. But then when you try to find out what should I eat, it seems like there's a lot of ideology out there, and there's not, it doesn't seem to be born out of a very scientific process. And I would assume that there's also a lot of individuality, not just between people, but I know that I've experienced that the sicker I was, like, the fewer foods I could handle, almost like the healthier you are, the more you could handle. So even the same person at different stages in their life might have a different ideal diet. Like, how do you figure out, how does the average person figure out what's the right foods for them?
Yeah. And I think that that's it's a challenging question, because you don't want to get stuck in that, ideology or that, dogma of diets, right? But the thing is that we also need to be paying attention to, which I think a lot of people aren't doing, is paying attention to how foods are actually affecting our bodies. One of the major ones that I get people to start paying attention to is bowel movements, because bowel movements will give me so much information about how their digestive tract is functioning and the balance of that microbiome, and then how the foods that they're eating are actually affecting their body. So that's what I get my patients to be paying attention to, because that will give me a lot of insight into whether the diet that they're eating is actually good for their systems. So I'm a strong believer in eating lots of vegetables. So green leafy vegetables, I think are very important and have high amounts of mineral content and nutrient content, and will also have the fibers in it to help feed the healthy bacteria in our gut. So that's a starting point. I think if people can increase the amount of vegetables in their diet. I also am a strong believer in having healthy fats. And I think that a lot of us don't have a lot of healthy fats in our diet. One of my favorites is avocados, in terms of having good healthy fats, because those healthy fats are going to help to feed or support really every cell membrane in our bodies is needing those healthy fats. But it also, our brains are made of fats, our whole nervous system is made of fats, so we need good healthy fats in order to support a strong healthy body. And I'm also a believer in eating clean meats and clean proteins. So grass-fed, grass-finished meats, or wild meats, or wild fishes. And the cleaner the meats, I think then we can actually take those in, and those can be a major building blocks in terms of our proteins. So as well as our mineral and nutrient balance. So
do you ever find that
combination of those, yeah.
Do you ever find that when people increase the vegetable intake that it backfires, that it doesn't serve them well?
Yeah. And so I think that that can happen when we have people who have really inflamed and damaged digestive tracts, then having raw foods can be very challenging on that digestive tract. And so often with those raw foods, sometimes, you know, we go through a point in time. It's not that raw foods are bad. It's just that some people can't handle them as we try to heal the gut. So as we go through that, those, and usually it's those initial stages of healing the gut. What I suggest doing is that you slightly cook or saute those vegetables so that you still can get some nutritional value of them. You can get the fibers from them, but the cooking of them will help to break down some of those molecular bonds and makes it easier for someone to digest. And sometimes you're just starting with small portions. And I know this is often surprising to patients when I tell them, you know, at this point in time, I don't want you having any salads.
Well, I could speak that. I feel like I hit a period where vegetables, as much as I like enjoy them and believed, you know, I definitely had deep rooted belief systems that they were good for me.
Yeah.
Like the outcomes didn't reflect that. And I noticed that there were times where if I ate vegetables, like it didn't serve me well. And yeah. I didn't want to lie to myself and say, no, vegetables are good. And I know that it's interesting because over the last few years, it seems like I don't know if it's a growing population or it's just a more vocal population now where people have moved away from plant matter and have had like really positive outcomes that are not deniable. And I wonder like, why is that? Like there's a whole movement now of people that really just eat animal product, if you said like 3 or 4 years ago, people would say like, that's crazy. And you'll be dead by the end of the year.
Yeah.
But you look at these people and they seem to be doing really well. And it might make the average person kind of scratch their head. How could they not have any vegetables or any fruits or any nuts and thrive? What do you have an idea of like what's going on there where there's certain populations that just really thrive on avoiding all plants completely?
Yeah. And, I would say that, if you'd asked me that, a few years ago, I'd be like, oh no, that sounds like, you know, a highly inflammatory diet. Like you can't eat that high amount of protein and be healthy. And, I've definitely, decided to kind of, follow some of these people who are kind of leaders in that movement and just learn from them. And I think that it's actually can be a useful tool, I think, we're talking about, I know we get stuck in dogma, but talking about that carnivore diet. But if you actually listen to some of those leaders in it, you know, it's not that they're just talking about eating steaks every day. What they're actually talking about is they're talking about eating clean sources. So grass-fed and grass-finished meats, and also eating them from head to tail. So eating every part of them. So it's not just eating steak dinners every day. It's eating all of those all of those organ meats, right? That are actually highly nutritious. So they are getting a lot of those nutrients that they need.
They can be pretty hard to get down, though.
Exactly.
probably once a week or two, I force myself to eat liver, and I have to force myself. I'm doing it like I'm just taking one for the team almost. I'm just going to get this down. I've tried to cook it so many different ways. If you're out there and you have a legit recipe that doesn't suck, I would love for a listener to send one my way. I'm very open-minded to find a find ways to get these nutrients into my body, and I definitely struggle with it. My family has not caught on yet. They won't eat any of that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. But, and I also have some of that organic liver as well. And yeah, just trying to figure out a good way to eat it or right. to just cut it up really small and just add it into meals, you know, just to make sure you get that nutrient density into you. But you know, there's also other ways that you can do it in terms of just having it as in a capsule form.
There are some companies
who are doing that. So
yeah, I found a couple products that make it a little easier to get down, but you can't, like, I've done a lot of searching of, like, you know, what are the most nutrient dense foods, and it doesn't seem to matter how a list is created. Like, if it's a nutrient content per calorie or if it's per volume, the organ meats are always at the top of the list. Like, you can't really deny.
Yeah, exactly.
It seems like if you eat them, it takes the burden off the rest of your diet. Like, it's the perfect, like, multivitamin in food form, and you kind of get to check a lot of boxes with one type of food. It's just, man, it really would be nice if they just tasted better.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that what you have to realize is that there's a big difference between industrial meats and grass-fed organic proteins, and that there's a completely different composition. That if people are, you know, kind of getting into like a carnivore diet and they're doing it with just conventional meats, that it would be an inflammatory picture. But because you know, a lot of those leaders in the field realize that it's more about having the composition of those grass-fed meats, and when you're having grass-fed meats, it's going to be not just more nutrient dense in terms of the profiles of those meats and the profiles of those fats that you're getting into the body, as well as the mineral balance. It's also a way that's better for our environment. So realizing that there's a huge difference in terms of the profile of those foods, in terms of that industrial meats compared to the grass-fed organic meats, makes a big difference in terms of the nutrient density of those foods. So I think that those are the things that really need to be clarified. But I think that, you know, you do get it in terms of bone broths and collagens that you're getting from those foods, and in even just the bioavailability of like the fat soluble vitamins. So I'm not completely against heading more towards that carnivore, but just understanding how to do that in the healthiest way possible.
Right. Well, you mentioned something earlier that I think is really important, and I don't think we hear enough from doctors in general, where you said, I'm listening to these folks and I'm learning. Like, to have a continual curiosity. I think some people feel a little, they get down when you go to visit a doctor and there lacks like a true curiosity to learn more, to really believe that we don't know everything just yet, and we're in this together to figure out what the right way to go is, and to be open. And I think we need just more open conversations where the dogma is kind of put aside. Let's, you know, be as objective as possible and be willing to try things that, you know, maybe might be out of our current belief system or just thought of as out of the box, and being honest with, you know, what happens. And if, you know, and then making that judgment, well, did this intervention, this tool, as you say, did this serve or did not? I know for me personally, like, playing with that game plan dietarily has definitely helped, and I can't deny it. And I usually eat vegetables, not because they make me feel good. It's because I like them. Sometimes it's a social thing. Like, they're on the table and everybody's eating them and I like them.
Yeah.
But it's very common that I regret it. And I don't know, maybe it's the dose makes the poison and I just have to enjoy smaller servings. And I haven't really played with that. But Interesting. We touched on a few things here. You, under your bio there, you mentioned that you specialize in biological medicine. So does that differ from like naturopathic medicine? Is that, what does that term refer to?
Yeah, so it's, so they basically, you know, going through the naturopathic college, you know, you learn about how the body is, has the ability to be able to heal itself. But where biological medicine is a bit different is that biological medicine is really looking at terrain. So it's the environment that our cells live in. And by cleaning up that internal terrain, we allow those cells to be healthier. So it's looking at it a little bit at a deeper level, and it's realizing that the body is a really dynamic system, that it is constantly breaking down and building back up. And within every cell of our body, we have these regulatory systems. And so these regulatory systems are allowing our bodies to adapt to stressors and to be able to heal themselves. So these, you know, the best way to describe those regulatory systems is, if we are in a hot environment, then our body will start sweating. And if we're in that cold environment, then our bodies will shiver. So we are adapting to differences and changes in our environment, and every cell in our body is doing that. So we have these self-regulatory systems, and then we have different stressors on the body that can affect those self-regulation systems. So those stressors, I break it down into six stressors. So there's food sensitivities, immune challenges, heavy metals, environmental toxins, anything emotional, and anything physical. So those can be all different stressors on the body that can affect that regulation of the body. And then what we have is pretty, I'm going to say, sophisticated testing that looks at these, of how well the body is able to regulate itself. So we use things like a whole body thermography that looks at the temperature of the body and how the body is able to regulate that temperature. And then we do something called heart rate variability. So it's assessing that autonomic nervous system and how well that autonomic nervous system can properly self-regulate. And then we do things like look at, it's called dark field microscopy. So we look at that body's internal environment. So we have these sophisticated ways of testing to see what does that terrain look like, what does those self-regulatory systems look at, and then what we're doing is we're identifying and removing those stressors and working on trying to get that self-regulation working a lot better, and also trying to clean up that terrain. And when we do all of these things, then we actually help to get the body to be able to function at its best. So, and
did you say this dark field,
dark field microscopy. So it's just we just do a prick of the fingertip. We put it onto a slide, look at it, and look at those blood cells underneath the microscope, and that gives us a picture of what your body's terrain is looking at, like what that body's internal environment is looking like. So whether cells are all stuck together or if they're nicely spaced out. We get to look at those cell membranes. Are those cell membranes perfectly round, all about the same size, or are they different shapes and different sizes, and are those cell membranes disrupted?
What would what would cause cells to be to look differently in that field? Like, what would cause a cell to be different size or not round, or?
Yeah, so one of the things that can happen is if we have oxidative stress, so a number of free radicals in our system, that would actually disrupt those cell membranes. So sometimes those cell membranes, instead of looking like they're perfectly round, they can look like little bottle caps, like those old-time bottle caps. So they, and you can imagine that if a cell membrane isn't that perfectly round state, that can be affecting how well we're absorbing nutrients and also getting rid of toxins. In addition to also, you know, how well do those cells take in oxygen? So
biological medicine basically refers to dealing with the terrain, more of looking at it as an internal environment as a whole.
Yeah, exactly. And we just set up that environment and change that environment so that the body has that capacity to be able to heal itself. So when people are asking me, you know, like what disease processes or, you know, what health issues do you treat? And it's not really about what I treat. It's the approach that I use. And really I can use that approach from everything from people coming in with allergies and eczema, like I did as a kid, to autoimmune disease, to cancer. So we kind of... that biological medicine approach can help with any health issue.
Interesting. Yeah, I share. So I had, you say eczema, I say eczema.
Okay. Yeah.
I personally dealt with that quite a bit, and actually not totally out of the woods, but pretty close. But for a couple of years, had that really bad. And
yeah,
it's interesting because back when you were talking about detoxification, I think I was guilty of like going in the wrong order, I guess.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, without having, I guess, drainage pathways open and starting detoxification protocols, and then it kind of backfiring and making worse, like as if I just became more toxic.
Yeah. And sometimes that can happen and people say, oh, well, this stuff doesn't work. And it's like, well, we didn't do it in the right order.
Yeah. And, you know, probably, From what I learned over time, that the longer you've been sick, like you have to kind of set your expectation too. You know, some people, you want to go to a doctor and you've been dealing with something for a few years and you want it to be gone like this week.
Yeah.
And you've been dealing with it for a few years. It might have been brewing for a few decades prior to your symptoms. And it might, you know, you have to have a realistic approach time-wise.
Yeah,
for sure. To allow your body to heal. The body does need to heal, but you got to give it space and set it on a proper course. And then it does take time. And it's very easy, especially if it's not a linear progression, where if it's, you know, two steps forward, one step back, a lot, you know, as you go, a lot of those one step or two step backs might make you feel that, well, this isn't working, and then abandon the process. Where sometimes it's just a lot of like little wins and then all these little learning experiences along the way where, okay, that didn't work, or here I'm off course and let me get back to the basics. And it's interesting. So I could definitely speak to that. And eczema is, I mean, for any of those out there that have dealt with that, it does seem to be never the source of the problem. It's always a symptom of something. It's an expression of something that's underlying. And it can really interfere with your quality of life. I mean, if it's really bad, I remember it's tough to kind of go out, you don't want to face anybody. I remember I had eczema pretty much from head to toe.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't feel real good about yourself, and it makes it harder to stay optimistic when every day you're starting off with really an emotional thing that's going against you, where you're not feeling good about yourself. And you know, you gotta love yourself enough to heal. And sometimes it's hard to love yourself when, you know, you feel like curling up in fetal position and like scratching all your skin off or something. It's you could really get stuck, and I was stuck for a long time. And I remember going through the I guess traditional doctors, I don't know, allopathic care or whatever. Yeah. And I felt like whether I went to my primary care or the dermatologist that he sent me to, I even saw a nephrologist at one point because there was a blood value that made him want to do that. And they all had the same tool. It was steroid. It was one tool. And I played with that tool for a while because I didn't know anything else. And then luckily enough, I was fortunate to be directed towards like a functional medicine doc they just asked different questions. It was clear that they're working from a different framework.
Yeah.
Which allows them to be more open to possibilities.
Yeah.
And they had seemed to be a larger toolkit, and there was definitely some trial and error. Like some tools didn't work.
Yeah.
But it was a framework that allowed for more possibilities, I found.
Yeah.
And I'm really grateful that I went that way, because eventually it gave me the tool set to really help myself.
Yeah.
It took time.
Yeah.
And like I said, I'm not totally out of the woods, but I'm probably about 90-95% there, which feels very good. And there was a time where I remember, like, I didn't think that was ever going to happen.
Yeah.
Like you get, when you're not feeling good, you could get feelings of like despair, almost like, am I even going to be alive, you know, a few years from now? And then all the stress around that, like, is this me dying? Like, what is all this? And it could be a very dark place emotionally for people. So it's great to hear that, you know, there are different ways to approach these things. And, you know, I'm on some like Facebook groups of folks that have gone through like chronic illness, and they've taken a much more kind of open-minded approach going through either, you know, referring to what their naturopathic doctor or their functional medicine doctor showed them, and with a lot of really inspiring success stories. And it's nice that now with the technology that we don't just have to hand our power to our local doctor. We have access to learn from each other through these technological platforms, whether it's a Facebook group of people where, you know, you could hear other people's stories that sound like very similar and what worked for them. And you could try, and you have more power to like try things and see what happens. Where I think like my parents' generation, there wasn't any of that. And there was so much reliance on the one local doctor that they saw, and they were the final word, and which, you know, oftentimes might have been helpful, but it's like giving away your power. And like you said, the body knows how to heal, and we have to give, no matter even if a doctor helps you, they're not healing you. It's you that's doing the healing.
Exactly.
The doctor's giving you ideas that could create space for it. And then you got to let your body do its thing that it knows how to do.
I think it's really, really important for people to realize that the body can heal itself and that they don't have to suffer unnecessarily. And I think so many people just suffer unnecessarily, thinking that this is just how it goes. And this is just what they have to learn to live with. And I know I felt like that for a number of years, and I think that's not the case. We have lots of power in terms of being able to take care of ourselves and heal our bodies.
Gotcha. What are some of the other like modalities other than playing with the nutrition, like under the biological medicine approach? What are some of the other like tools or tricks that you guys use to help people get back on track?
We got lots of them. so that's the fun part, is that we got lots of tools in our toolkit, to approach it. Right. So, yeah. So everything from, diet to, taking, different supplements that range from botanicals to nutritionals to, drainage remedies. And then within my clinic, I use IVs a lot. So we will use, IVs really at different levels, from, just regular kind of Myers IVs, which are, still high dose, but, we move up to really high doses of vitamin C. For some of my cancer patients or some of my autoimmune pictures.
And what does that usually do for, like, when someone has cancer and they take a high dose of vitamin C, is that something that they notice a benefit from?
Again, it's a process and it can take some time, but what the high dose vitamin C is doing is that at a high dose, it becomes a pro-oxidant. So it's no longer an antioxidant, it's now a pro-oxidant. And what that vitamin C does is it moves intracellular and it becomes hydrogen peroxide, which actually will kill off unhealthy cells, and it'll leave healthy cells stronger and intact. So
the body actually produces hydrogen peroxide.
Yeah, so it naturally produces hydrogen peroxide. Yep. So
it's, can that threshold where vitamin C goes from being an antioxidant, which from what I understand, I guess it's there to eventually donate an electron to satisfy a free radical.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That threshold where it goes from that antioxidant mechanism to pro-oxidant.
Yeah.
Can that be done with an oral dose, or is that required? Does somebody have to go in and sit for an hour with an IV in their arm to make that different, I guess, mechanism take place?
Yeah, I just, because I know that so I'm going to say yes. because I would say that in terms of, you know, I've had patients who've tried to do high doses of liposomal vitamin C. So liposomal is vitamin C that can easily move into the cells. I'm sure more people need to do some scientific research on it, but I just haven't seen them being able to get that to a high enough level to get it to that therapeutic dose that that IV vitamin C can get it at. So
I'm guilty of attempting to get to that dose.
Yeah, and I've had patients do that, like drink basically like bottles of liposomal vitamin C to try to see if they can shift that up. But I don't think we can, even with a liposomal vitamin C, get it up to those therapeutic doses that high dose vitamin C is able to do. Because with that vitamin C, what we do is, since we're going right into the venous system, right into that circulatory system, we're bypassing the digestive system. So your body doesn't have to metabolize it through the same avenues of having to absorb it through that digestive tract, filter it through the liver, and then eventually getting into the cell system. So the challenge is that anytime you take it orally, we just can't get it up to that high therapeutic dose that you can with vitamin IVs.
Gotcha.
So yeah, vitamin IVs, we have, yeah, chelation IVs that we run.
That's for when people
for
get a heavy
helping
metal.
To move heavy metals out of the body if heavy metals are showing up as a problem. We do local hypothermia, so it's using heat to break down typically tumor cells or unhealthy cells at a deep level, so the heat goes quite deep.
You said local. Do you mean you actually heat up the tumor itself,
or
do
you heat up the whole body? So we can actually go locally in terms of, instead of, we do also do like whole body hypothermia, which is.
I've heard of that. From what I understand, in the States, you're in Canada, right?
I'm in Canada. Yeah.
Yeah. So in the States, I think that's not legal or not allowed. If I'm correct on that. So you guys can do that.
Yeah, I think it kind of depends on you guys from state to state. So I think probably some states that are able to do it. But yeah, so it's just helping to heat up the body, just
locally,
like a fever would. Yeah.
Gotcha. So if you're doing that locally, what do you do? Is there a tool that you're just putting
I have a specific machine and it's basically like an electroid, or kind of looks like a... maybe looks like a, when you're at a physio, one of the heads that they would use when they do an ultrasound.
Okay.
And
is there any risk in that? Do people, can you get like physically burned from it?
Yeah, or? You could. So that's why you got to make sure that there's good communication between the patient and
not a good time to hold secrets to yourself.
And the technician that's doing it. Yeah, because you want to make sure that it can get quite hot on the skin, but you want to make sure that you're pulling that off. Gotcha. And
you do the
burning.
So the full hyperthermia. So you heat up the whole body to basically simulate a fever?
A fever, yeah, exactly. So
that triggers just the body's own response to, I guess, infection? Or?
Yeah, so, well, and cancer cells also don't like the heat.
Oh, really?
As well. So, and yeah, so what you're doing is you're getting the body up to a certain temperature, so basically a fever state, and then trying to hold it there as long as a person is able to. But it is quite it is quite uncomfortable for patients.
Well, what usually, are we talking about? What temperature and for how long are you?
So we're usually aiming for like 30. I'm trying to think of what that would be for you guys. We're at 38.5 degrees Celsius. So that's probably, I don't know, like, I think it's like below, maybe 103, right? Because you guys are 103.
It's up there. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's.
So that person's laying there hot and uncomfortable.
And they're laying there hot. And yeah, usually we're aiming for them to hold it there for, you know, 30 minutes to 60 minutes, you know, and what we do is we stick a thermometer rectally in and we're actually monitoring their temperature throughout it. And
is that something they would do like every week for some period of time or?
Yeah. So it sort of depends. I have, like I'll have patients who will come to the clinic for 2 or 3 weeks. And with those patients, we're usually trying to get them to do it, you know, 2 or 3 times a week while they're here. For patients,
and is it
who actually,
misery or are these people up for this? Or?
No. Yeah. So most of the patients it gets pretty tough. Like at first it's like, okay, this is okay. I can handle this. And then like near the end, they're like, how much longer? And you're kind of giving them the time. So,
well, I guess it's got to make other challenges in their life look less challenging.
Yeah, exactly. And we're usually we're giving them cold packs and putting cold packs on their, on their head, or letting them like kind of stick an arm out. So that kind of sometimes helps them to cool down a little bit.
So. The theory definitely makes sense. I would love to experience that. Maybe I'm just a glutton for punishment or something. But, I mean, the idea around it seems very logical to me.
Yeah.
Because everybody's experienced a fever and how that's, you know, part of the process of fighting something off.
Yeah, that's a natural immune reaction. And we're just kind of helping that process along. Gotcha. Sure. We do that. Another therapy that we have in our clinic is the pulsed electromagnetic fields. Have you heard of that?
I have done more than heard about it. I have a unit in my house that uses that.
Yeah.
And I've gone to a clinic where I laid on a fancy, I think the company is Pulse Centers.
Yeah, so that's where I have mine from too, yeah.
Okay, I guess they make, I don't know, maybe like a top of the line.
Yeah,
unit.
Exactly. So I have like, yeah, one of the kind of like medical grade, high voltage.
Can you take a moment and explain to the audience what pulsed electromagnetic field therapy is and how that works?
Yeah. So the earth actually has naturally occurring pulsed electromagnetic fields. That we would actually get if we were more in touch with the earth on a more frequent basis. But, you know, in our Western world, we have little connection with the earth. But these pulsed electromagnetic fields are very healing to our bodies, and our bodies actually need them. And what happens over time is that, like, our cells have a voltage. And what happens over time is that they actually lose that voltage. And What that pulse electromagnetic fields help to do is it helps to recharge that voltage of our cells, both the voltage of our cells and the transmembrane voltage. When it's low, then that's when we will have illness and disease processes. And by increasing that voltage, increasing that cellular energy, we actually help to get those cells to have that stronger voltage. And so we actually need a few sessions of those in order to kind of build up that voltage. But the analogy I like to use is like your cell phone over time will lose its charge. And what you need to do is you need to plug it in to the wall and charge up that that phone and increase that voltage of the phone in order to get it to be functioning optimally. And that's what the PEMF helps to do, is it helps to increase that voltage in every cell of our body.
That's cool. Yeah, I could speak to that. I mean, it feels good.
Yeah.
The one I have at home is very different than the Pulse Center's unit that I laid on.
Yeah.
That, I think the one I use now, it's a much more like subtle signal. Like you feel it, but it's really subtle. That Pulse Center one, I felt like it would just zap you.
Yeah, you can feel it, jarring.
Like, zap for like an hour straight. Yeah. What was interesting is that at first, the first few minutes, it would feel kind of intense, like almost like you're getting electrocuted or something, like at this really low level, but it became so relaxing.
Yeah.
And you would go into this like deep state of relaxation.
Yeah.
And then I would usually doze off, and it felt kind of almost like a hypnosis session. I mean, I felt like I'd get a big like theta wave dose, and I'd wake up and feel great usually the rest of the day. And I remember even, you know, when I was going, I had this eczema all over my body.
Okay.
The one thing that was interesting that about the eczema I had is it was so sensitive to interventions that it was a great barometer. Like if something helped, I knew within minutes.
Oh, 20, okay. Okay.
And then if something didn't help, I also knew within minutes.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
It was kind of a gift and a curse, I guess.
Yeah. Exactly.
But I remember I would go and lay on that PEMF table, and visually my rash would be like 50% gone after 1 hour. Now it didn't stay. So a few hours later it would start to creep back. But I knew that the fact that it could make it go away that amount, that time frame, showed me that there's a positive impact.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, it's a physiological change in the body.
Yeah, it's just wild because nothing's really touching you.
Yeah,
you're not taking anything. You're not ingesting anything.
Yeah.
You're hearing a noise to it, and you're feeling a zap. But like I remember being amazed, and it was repeatable. I did it, I think, once or twice a week for a good part of a year.
Okay. Oh wow. Okay. Awesome.
And like every time, the same thing happened.
Yeah.
And then a couple hours later, it would start to wear off. But it was very fascinating that you have this invisible force that would make a rash that at the time I probably already had for like a year, almost disappear, and like the quality of my skin would change, like it would be smoother. Wow, that's amazing that this could do it.
Yeah.
And you read about it, and it like it sounds logical, and you're still like, I don't really understand what's going on. Like, okay, so we're electrical, and we're basically a battery, and I guess this is juicing up the battery. So I guess it gives you the cellular energy to do whatever cells are supposed to do.
Yeah, exactly.
A little bit better.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah, it's very interesting because everyone feels differently on it, right? Like some people will, notice that they have like increased energy that day. Some people, their pain will decrease. Some people, they say they'll sleep better. And then where they feel that electrical pulse throughout their body, sometimes it's in their arm, sometimes it's in their back, sometimes it's in their head. So it's very interesting. I always ask people what their experience is because it's so different from person to person.
Yeah, that is interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. It'll be interesting to see over the next few years if that, I think we'll see that becoming more popular and more available. One thing I remember when I looked into it, it's not very readily available, at least where I am.
Yeah.
I mean, I got lucky and there was a place, about 15, 20 minutes away that has one, but like the next closest place was, you're talking about over an hour away. So I think there'll be a time where there'll be a lot more locations where people have access to these things. And I think those machines are not cheap. So it's not something that's very easy to get in your house.
Yeah.
So any other modalities that are like staples of the practice, or other than the IVs and the hypothermia and the PMS?
I walk through the main ones that we use for sure.
Okay. Now you have a book, Building a Healthy Child. Is this basically the same kind of concept, the same process, just for kids as far as like the approach to wellness, or is it something more specific?
Yeah, it's a little bit different in that. So my dad was actually diagnosed with cancer when I was just in naturopathic college, and unfortunately passed away like 9 months later before I was able to kind of figure out how to fix him. But that really led me on the research path of being able to figure out what was going on in terms of chronic disease. And what I realized in terms of chronic disease is that everything started in the gut. And then when I had my daughter, I wanted to figure out a way to be able to prevent, in terms of like our family history of cancer, and also looking at my childhood and saying, you know, I had like these bad allergies and eczema, how can I prevent all of this in her? And what I figured out was that if we could build her gut health properly right from the beginning, then we can prevent a lot of these other issues. And so basically my food, it's a food introduction program for children or for babies. And what it is it's just introducing foods in a way that helps to build their gut health properly right from the beginning. So that's the essence of the book. Yeah.
Great. And if you have kids out there, we'll go ahead and link to that book if you want to check it out in the show notes. Melina, is there any other topics you'd like to touch on today, or anything you'd like to add, or?
Well, I think that like with what's going on in the world, I think that what we also need to be talking about is understanding that there is ways for us to be able to support and improve our immune system. And one of the major ways we can do that is supporting our gut health. And because 80% of our immune system is housed in our gut. And if we support proper gut health, we'll be supporting our immune systems. So I would say major things would be to remove major inflammatory foods like gluten, cow's dairy, sugar, to like get outside and get some natural vitamin D, get outside and move our bodies. Our bodies are meant to move. So let's get some exercise in, or even just some movement of the body is going to help to improve our systems. Making sure we're drinking water. Our bodies are made of 70% water. We want to make sure that we're drinking clean sources of water. And another way to help support that immune system is to get good sleep. Sleep is very important for helping to rejuvenate our systems. So to me, like there's really simple basic stuff that we could all be doing, and that would actually improve the health of our like our society as a whole if we could all be doing these simple tactics.
Yeah, I feel like the message that we're exposed to so regularly through the media is so fear-based, and
yes, yeah.
I feel like if they took just half the energy that they were putting into scaring the crap out of us into telling us what to do to like improve our chances when we get exposure to whether it's viruses or any other like pathogenic organism. Like, it just seems such better use of our time to, you know, do the thing, like get out there and do the things to get yourself in as resilient as possible. And I wish that message was just coming through more clearly. It just seems to be really lacking at all levels. So thank you for mentioning that. If people wanted to find out more and take maybe a deeper dive into what you do and maybe reach out to you to work, I assume you guys are still taking patients through, are you just doing telemedicine or do you have people still coming in?
We're open. So we are patients. Yeah.
So how do people reach you?
Yeah. So the best place to reach me is my website, which is advancednaturopathic.com. And then the place that probably I hang out the most in terms of social media would be my Instagram account, which is Dr. Melina Roberts is my Instagram handle.
Okay. And we'll link to that for the listeners in the show notes if you want to reach out to Dr. Roberts and see maybe if their services could offer you some help. I want to thank you for taking the time today to chat, and hopefully the listeners got some value out of it and maybe could inspire somebody to take a step in the right direction to help maybe them on their healing journey. So I do appreciate you showing up, and to the listeners out there, I'm really grateful for your listening, and thanks for tuning in, and check the show notes for access to Dr. Roberts' book and to check out her website to see, to learn more and see what it could do for you. Thanks again. I hope everybody out there has a terrific day.
Well, thank you again for tuning in and listening to this episode. I hope you enjoyed it, and hopefully you found something that was useful for you. I really enjoyed the conversation myself with Dr. Roberts, and we'll link in the show notes if you want to connect with her and learn more about the resources they offer. Check the video description here and there'll be all the links you need, or to check out her book. Thanks again for joining, and I hope you're enjoying these episodes. If you have any comments, then please send them in. And if you are enjoying it, please do me a favor and just go to your podcast player and leave a review. I greatly appreciate it. I hope you have a terrific day.